Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Every year, my dad brines the turkey like the day before, you know, to before he cooks it. Mm-hmm. And every year, he tells me that he's brined the turkey with, like, assuming that I don't already know that he has brined the turkey. Like, he's like, turkey's, like, I went over there in the, like, early morning or, like, midday, and turkey was done. It was just waiting, and he was like, not worried about it drying out. I brined it. I was like, Dad, I know. You tell me we this know. Every year.
Yeah. Hey, I brined it. Yeah.
Hey, I brined it.
I'm the rational consumer, as it were.
Out of paper, out of stock, there's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and box office manager at the Loose Screw Playhouse, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, your productivity czar.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
I can't even go near a cigarette now without thinking of a penis, and vice versa.
Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week, does watching The Office make you a better person, or can it make you a better person? Mm.
Can it versus does it?
Yeah. Yes. This is a listener question that we're going to spend some time on. After that, we're going to do a little mailbag and a little trivia.
We're going to have a lot of fun. It's good to be back.
It's good to be back. We took a week off for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, a little break.
We're all several pounds heavier. Mm-hmm. We're just feeling good about Thanksgiving.
Mm.
But
and I did get very cozy and watched a lot of Office.
Oh, yeah.
As weekend. You do.
I know. No Thanksgiving episodes.
No Thanksgiving episodes, but it is time now that we can start watching the Christmas episodes.
Right. Why do you think shows do that? They generally do Halloween and Christmas.
Well, The Office aired on Thursday nights, and Thanksgiving is a Thursday night.
That's true.
So, I don't know. It wouldn't really have made sense to do it the week before.
Night of?
Night of, I don't think
after the football.
It
stay
was on
tuned.
At like 9 p.m. or something
I guess
like that.
So.
Not many people would have turned in for that.
I think,
tuned in,
and
for
you
that.
Don't do Thanksgiving in the office.
That's what I was going to say. In the context of our own offices, you don't usually have a Thanksgiving party. You don't put up Thanksgiving decorations.
Yeah, that's true.
You do like a Friendsgiving or a potluck or something, but as opposed to Halloween, which is costumes, and Christmas, which has so much decoration. So,
sure.
You know,
Maybe you watch Dinner Party on Thanksgiving.
There
maybe
you go.
That should be the sanctioned Thanksgiving episode. For
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
All right.
Nothing more than I love on Thanksgiving, like a nice ossobuco. Mm. It's the braise for several hours.
Uh-huh, and a little bit of red wine dipped steak.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Dwight has a turkey leg.
That's right. There you go.
That's true.
Mm, good
that's
turkey
true.
Leg.
Yeah. Yeah. Throw on a little hunter and... Mm-hmm. Go dancing. All
right. Well, we'll dive right in here. This is a question that we've been sitting on for a while. We got from Pat back in September. And honestly, ever since we got the question, we've been talking about it and talking about doing maybe a whole episode about it. So we'll see how far we can go. Here's the question. Earlier this month, Mike Schur, of course, you know, producer, writer, extraordinaire, Moe's, participated in a panel. Participated in a panel discussion at Notre Dame that discussed the question, can TV make us better people? Schur said yes, and that he always tries to make shows that impact the viewers in a positive way, and that the explicit purpose of The Good Place, which is his other show with Ted Danson and Kristen Bell, is to have the viewers consider moral questions and become more ethically minded. Since he was a writer and producer on our favorite show, it got me wondering about morality in The Office. So he's got three questions, and we'll start with the first. Who is the most morally upright character on The Office? Second question is, what life lessons have you taken away from The Office? And the third is, do you think watching The Office has made you a better person? So we'll start with the first. Who is the most morally upright character on The Office? Nate. Did you guys have anything to add to that?
You nailed it. You nailed it. Yeah.
You know, that's the simplicity is key.
I mean, he's a good,
most morally simple. Maybe.
Yes.
Before we dive into this, I would recommend to our listeners that you do watch this talk that he gave at Notre Dame. It's really interesting. Mm-hmm. It is very heavily geared towards The Good Place, put on by Notre Dame's college. They have a professor of philosophy and a professor of, I think it's TV studies or cinema studies, on the stage with him, and they do talk about that stuff. But
they just box.
Yeah. But Mike sure gives a ton of insight into not just The Good Place, but especially in the Q&A sections, different shows, Parks and Recreation, as well as The Office. There's a ton of really great info there about, like, the it's funny you said Moe's at the end.
Yeah.
You know, he said, I could cure cancer tomorrow, and in my obituary, the first line would still be, famous for playing Cousin Moe's on The Office.
Known for his role as Moe's.
Right? Yeah. And he gave insight into the origins of Cousin Moe's and, like, how that character came about. But everyone should check that out.
Okay. Yeah, great video. And if you haven't watched The Good Place, great show.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because, like, The Good Place is so much more directly. Like, there's literally scenes where Chidi's with a whiteboard, like, right and wrong, and they're teaching about ethics. Yeah. So the show wrestles with this very directly.
Yeah,
but The Office is a little more nuanced in how we are looking at this.
And, you know, Mike Schur was, you know, basically the showrunner for a long time on The Office. So if that's important to him, you know, it was working its way into the fabric of The Office for sure. But back to the first question: who is the most morally upright character on The Office? What did you think, Edwin?
I tried to go a little deeper into this one, and the one character who stood out to me the most was Pam. I don't know what you guys thought, but
yeah,
basically, I don't think any character on The Office is built to be a 100% morally upright or something like that. And I think it's important when we talk about morality, like, you know, what is the definition of morality? And that's difficult for us to go into too much without going into.
If you're listening to this for an answer to that, sorry.
Yeah, deep philosophical questions but basically, I saw, you know, as it comes to being a good person or trying to act morally, mm-hmm. what I saw the most was Pam and her kind of emotional intelligence throughout the show. The extent to which she goes out of her way or sees characters in sort of low emotional places and tries to pick them up. It happens a lot with Michael, of course. They have a really unique relationship. It happens with Dwight as well, and it happens with Karen at other times. I can go through a few different examples that I have. The first one that I thought of, I'll just go in the order that I kind of came up with them.
Yeah.
The first one is in grief counseling, where Michael is clearly struck by his own mortality and is in a place where he is desperately searching for affection and attention,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, near the end, it starts as Michael seemingly wanting attention, you know, to make it look like he's going through a hard time because Kelly gives him that hug.
Right.
And then by the end, you do see him kind of in a place where he's worried about the guy who had my job is now dead, right? He says something like that.
Yeah.
And when they're giving the bird funeral, and Pam says to, you know, she said, I didn't think I'd be giving a bird funeral today. But I wrote down the quote. This is the eulogy that she gives for the bird. She says, what do we know about this bird? You might think not much. It's just a bird. But we do know some things. We know it was a local bird. Maybe it's that same bird that surprised Oscar that one morning with a special present from above. Then Kevin says, I remember that. That was so funny. Pam says, and we know how he died, flying into the glass doors. But you know what? I don't think he was being stupid. I think he just really, really wanted to come inside our building to spread his cheer and lift our spirits with a song. Dwight, it's not a songbird. An impression, then. Lastly, we can't help but notice that he was by himself when he died. But of course, we all know that doesn't mean he was alone. Because I'm sure there were lots of other birds out there who cared for him very much. Mm-hmm. He will not be forgotten, right? Mm-hmm. So this is very mm-hmm. specifically about Michael. Especially
zooming in on Michael.
Yes. Especially when she says an impression then, you know.
An impression,
someone who comes in to try to, like, lift spirits.
Maybe a Chris Rock routine.
Different characters, a sumo suit, right? But yeah, that was a moment where Pam kind of goes out of her way to kind of pick up Michael.
That's a great, yeah.
And then moving on to the Doomsday episode in season 8, where Dwight is in this really low place because he didn't get the manager job.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's kicked out of this meeting with Robert and Andy, mm-hmm. and he says, mm-hmm. last night I dreamed that the number two was the most valued number in the world.
Yeah.
Vice president had all the power. Athletes right. fought for silver medals. Women were considered the best gender. Stadiums of fans shouted, we're number two. As with all my dreams, I'm guessing it was about my fear of immigrants. But anyway, he creates the doomsday device, and they all complain. They all get upset at him. And even Oscar says, Dwight, be human for once. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the episode, what we see is the small task force, the like last ditch Hail Mary effort mm-hmm. of Andy, Pam, Aaron, and Kevin go to mm-hmm. Dwight's house to try to pick him up. And Pam succeeds only by appealing to Dwight's human side. She says, you know, what are you doing when he's digging the horse grave?
Yeah.
And she says, I forgot how beautiful your house is or how pretty your house is yeah. when they walk inside. And in the end, he does cancel the doomsday device because yes. she treats him as a human.
Right, right. right.
There are a number of moments like that. I mean, should I keep going?
Yeah.
At the last day in Florida, where Dwight is really arrogant and excited about this new role, Jim gives him a present. He hits it with the golf club. And Jim tries to tell him that Dwight is going to get fired by Robert. Robert's going to tank the store.
Right.
And Pam says on the phone to Jim, if Dwight's about to get fired, you have to tell him. Just get the words out. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
So she kind of gets Jim to make one last ditch effort for Dwight to save Dwight.
Yeah. Just cause
when Jim has said, you saw that, I tried.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then it leads to the Jim Dwight fight sequence, which is so funny. Like watching that again.
Yeah,
the different moves that Dwight tries. Dwight licking Jim's hand, you know.
Yeah, pretending that he's still hurt. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, so that's a moment where Pam gets Jim to kind of save Dwight. But then even at the end of that, Jim saves Dwight from having to explain himself. Mm-hmm. From, you know, everyone back at Scranton has been told that Dwight is moving on. Mm-hmm. So that's just another example. In the lecture circuit, Pam reads the letter from Holly. Granted, this is a mixed bag moment from Pam in terms of morality.
I know. Let's
acknowledge.
This is a whole different thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Where totally. She says, and she turns to the camera and goes, what? I'm not in love with her. Right. So you can't say that Pam is 100% morally upright.
Sure.
But in these moments where she makes these sort of emotional appeals to people and shows emotional intelligence, that's where I found the most morality. The last one, I guess, that I'll mention just really quickly, body language when Michael is getting signals from Donna. Pam seems to kind of see that there might still be a chance for them. In the Michael Scott Paper Company arc, when Pam kind of picks up Michael when they're at the condo and Michael is really down on himself, he gets egg in his crock.
Which
right?
wouldn't even be happening, which probably wouldn't even have been happening if she hadn't joined him in the first place.
Yeah. Right, yeah, that's
you
true.
Know, I mean, that move is like, that's one of the most pick your friends up moves she does.
And the two of them go back and forth during that arc where,
sure.
you know, Pam is upset about, you know, She says that she's applied for jobs at other places, and you know, she didn't even get an interview, right? Mm-hmm. She applies to like Best Buy at Old Navy, places
right.
like that.
Right.
But they pick each other up over the course of that. And the last one that I
Michael
thought of...
Michael makes her coffee in the morning.
Yes, yes, that's true. Oh, milk and sugar, to be fair.
Yeah.
The last one that I saw is Benihana Christmas.
Yeah.
When Angela kind of pushes Karen all of her ideas down. She's, you tried this, you know, it, clearly this is not a fit. And Pam goes to Karen, even when she's dating Jim at the time, and says, you know, that was pretty crazy with Angela. And they, you know, form the committee to plan parties, and that all plays out. But that's what I saw the most in terms of a single character was Pam and her relationships with the other characters.
I think that's great. I mean, I had found this moral alignment that somebody did where, you know, where you got like X-axis, Y-axis, good and evil, lawful or chaotic. And they put Pam as the lawful good character. They put Kevin and Daryl as neutral good and Michael and Aaron as chaotic good.
But, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think that one thing that I was looking for in trying to break down this question, I kept coming back to empathy.
Yeah.
And compassion and putting yourself in other people's shoes. And Pam is definitely the person who does that the most on the show. And we watch Michael learn empathy over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Nearly every episode. He has to be taught right from wrong. But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, Daryl, too, I just doesn't
Daryl,
really...
Yeah.
It's pretty solid. Besides calling... the girl he hooked up with once long ago, a dog.
Daryl also steps up to talk Michael down from the ledge in safety training.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
That was a moment where Jim, Pam, and Daryl kind of team up in some yeah. extent to kind of pull Michael back, kind of back from the ledge.
He's like, oh, I have to do this. I don't know what I'm saying here. You know, it's like, that's a look on his face.
Yeah, it's a different kind of morality. He's a bit more stoic. He's not going out of his way to, like, help people or things like that. He's kind of more, if you take that... what's the trolley
trolley problem?
Yeah, so
speaking of the Good Place,
right? Speaking of the Good Place, so you've got a train on its way to hit five workers who are working on the train tracks.
Well, it's probably going somewhere else, but
sure. Well, yes, but along it's going to hit five people and kill them. You are standing next to a lever that you can hit the switch and the train goes, but it's going to kill one person then. So it's like, do you jump in to save people and change their fate and kill somebody, or do you just step back? So Pam might be more of a pull the lever type, and Daryl more of a just, you know, shouldn't get involved type.
Mike sure went out of his way to call out how funny the trolley problem is. He says he was in a college class on philosophy, and they gave that scenario, and he laughed out loud, like, in class.
It is really funny.
And that the other one that they brought up was there's a janitor at a hospital, and there are five patients who all need an organ. Is it, like, is it morally correct to kill the janitor to donate the organs to all these people? And he says,
poor janitor.
Why does he need to be a janitor?
Well, I don't know, but Mike sure says, how hilarious is that? What is this world that they live in that five people go to a hospital, you're a doctor, and they all need different organs? Like, it's like, you know,
what's happening in that
all
town?
Yeah, exactly. What is happening in the town?
Frank.
Right. Yeah.
Really healthy
exactly.
janitor.
Yeah.
Over there.
Yeah,
he's just whistling and mopping. Yeah.
Hey, doc.
If only. In the office, it would be Nate, though, wouldn't it?
Yes.
It would. They look around and they find Nate.
It'd be Nate.
He would be
harvested. You kill Nate to save five people?
Absolutely.
Absolutely not.
Just the inherent silliness of that question. Yeah.
One last thing for Daryl's case,
sure.
I think. Well, one of my favorite Daryl moments is the when Andy, he's trying to give Andy some guidance on him trying to get those... Having that little sales.
Oh, the seminar.
The seminar.
Seven.
And, you know, they are jackals. And he helps.
He lowers the newspaper.
Yeah. Like, he's there to be a word of wisdom to Andy, you know. And he does that more than any other character, as sort of people will go to him for the good advice. Like, Michael can always count on him for advice, even when Daryl messes with him. Like, Daryl's usually good for a clear-headed decision.
Yes.
You know,
Daryl, when you first held your baby, did you feel a connection with your baby? Hell yeah, Mike.
You know why? Because it was my baby.
Right.
Do you feel connected to him?
Yeah.
Like, what about me? You want to hold me?
Mm-hmm. And Mike could said, I?
A couple other characters that I found. Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was just one more thing to wrap up, Daryl, because Daryl was on my list for sure. Not my number one choice, but up there because he is one of the more honest characters. Like, he rarely lies.
Right.
Out of everyone in the show, you get a lot of people doing a lot of white lies. And he's pretty much looks you in the face and tells you what he thinks. He's the most complicated man Kelly's ever met.
he just kind of cares about doing his job well, not getting in other people's rice bowls, just kind of sticking to, minding his own business, which is moral in itself.
Lets people, he uses his truck. He gives people rides. He helps
That's
people move.
True. Mm-hmm. He's a good guy.
You know?
I've got a hookup who has a pickup.
Mm-hmm.
He just plays music with Andy for free.
Oh, you know Daryl? Yeah, he works here. Yeah.
Really quick, just for my answer on this
one. Yes, go ahead.
Well, no, I took... This is, like you said, very hard because morality is this just right and wrong, good and evil. I mean, you can go back to sort of these biblical questions and look at the office that way. Because it's like, yes, Pam is very compassionate, empathetic, but that doesn't necessarily equate to morality. And without going too deep, for me, if it's like someone who's the most upstanding in terms of what is right and wrong, for me is Dwight.
I listed Dwight as well.
Because, like, say what you want, and the big knock against Dwight is all the stuff with Angela, as far as like cheating with Angela, knowingly cheating with Angela on Andy. That is the number one evidence that would probably sink this in a court of law, this argument that Dwight, but
it's what happens in the business ethics episode.
Right. That aside, I don't think any other character lives by a moral code as much as Dwight.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
Again, this is just talking morality. Dwight's one of the only characters we really see, like we see characters struggling with how to handle a situation or how to treat somebody.
Uh-huh.
But in terms of just like people really struggling with the idea of is this right or is this wrong, like in the coup.
He knows and yeah.
Yeah, like I'm He's thinking of the coup. Certain. That's a whole episode about, and you literally see Dwight in the parking lot walking back and forth.
Yeah.
And he just takes off in the consequences. A full sprint. And then he comes back and then he's, you know,
he betrays
crouched by the
Michael.
Bushes.
Yeah.
He does because he thinks it's the right thing. He thinks he's doing the right thing. He thinks he could run the branch better. He thinks overall it would help the company if he was in charge. I'm not saying it's the morally right thing necessarily, yeah. But I mean, this is the problem with the morality is people have different standards for morals. Well, but if you go by that, I think Dwight's the most moral because he has his standards.
That is the where it gets sort of messy is for the context of our discussion, yeah. Not within the context of philosophy.
Yeah.
Is morality an objective sense of good and right and wrong, good and evil, virtue ethics, or is it a person who lives the most closely to their own personally defined set of morals? Right. Mm. Of course, Dwight is the one who sticks to his guns the most.
Yeah. Yeah.
As you said, you know, he is clearly the one who's most internally guided, and he is the only one with the confidence and to kind of act out all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas someone like Angela, who would consider herself moral, pulls back and kind of judges silently.
The most religious person, I would say, the least moral.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Well, on
like,
this
last thing, think about that, that trawler problem. I just think out of everyone,
he would
if that happened,
lever.
Dwight would immediately step up and just yank on the lever and be like, one, yeah, and he wouldn't even think about it.
Right.
He's like, this is the right thing. It's just a numbers game. It's
well,
a numbers game.
On this same moral alignment chart, the lawful evil characters are Angela and Dwight.
Yeah, so, I disagree.
So lawful.
Lawful.
You know, he has his own, he has his personal laws. He obviously cares about the law. He loves bragging about being a volunteer sheriff and whatnot. But
lawful evil kind of lines up, though, with what you're saying.
Yeah,
I think
so, too. I mean, what
you say that he will, pursue what he believes is the right or correct thing, even if it leads to consequences that, you know, maybe, I don't know, hurt people in their effects, I guess.
Sure.
Way that I, just for simplicity's sake, the way that I was kind of measuring right and wrong in approaching this question was level of empathy, level of caring about other people. Dwight is always trying to get everyone in the office fired. And
I know. I don't think that the empathy necessarily has to do with morality.
I think in the context of Pam, empathy leads her to do things that are good or virtuous, right? I think in the case of Dwight, his own moral code and his love for the branch and the company lead him to do things that maybe have good consequences for the company, for the business, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where they difference, right? Empathy isn't virtuous, but it leads to virtuous actions, right? Same with Dwight's morality. Maybe isn't virtuous in itself, but it leads him to do virtuous things.
Yeah.
Potentially, at least.
To be clear, I do. My number one choice would be Pam. I just wanted to give sort of the other side of the coin would be
I have Dwight listed as my number two as well. Yeah, for similar reasons that you mentioned. I think he always, and when you think about how much he loves the branch and how much he loves Michael, I went back to watch the injury to see who steps up in that moment, right?
Right.
And the way that he, you know, kind of cares for Michael, like without blinking, you know, he's standing there and he's got the little electric fan on Michael's foot. Like he does not hesitate whatsoever, to take care of the boss and to, you know, take care of, by extension, the company.
Sure. Yeah. But it's for him, it's a duty. He's a subordinate.
Correct.
This is
what
everyone, he's like, everyone should be doing this. Michael says we should do this. We should all do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of flavors of morality, but I think,
there is another line in the Doomsday episode where they all confront Dwight and they say, all right, Dwight, enter your password. And he says, no, I'm not going to do that. He says, you made 5 mistakes in less than a day. You don't deserve this branch. You can't change the rules just because you don't like the outcome.
Yeah.
Which I thought was super interesting, given that that kind of refers to him going for the manager job. Right, he didn't like the outcome, but he can't change the rules. He can't affect the company outside of kind of blowing the whole thing up. Right,
right.
Recommending that the branch be closed. Right, the only way that if he can't have the branch, no one can have the branch. It's an extension of that. Right,
I think it's funny too that Pam and Dwight, the two characters are kind of on either side of the spectrum in terms of just their affect with people.
Yeah,
but they have so many. They have the most scenes together that are the most touching. I think
they bond
a
lot.
I mean, where those two end up helping each other out so much, like, and it goes both ways. Like, Dwight's there for her, she's there for Dwight, and it's just, it's kind of a nice, it's sort of the entire spectrum of morality and, like, goodness. It's kind of, those two kind of basically cover it all.
There is that moment when Pam is crying and Dwight consoles her, and even though he's completely clueless to what's going on, He seems to be doing it just because he thinks it's the right thing to do to to just, you know, console somebody.
Same with the building issues when he sort of engineers this way for Pam to like figure out that he's in the wrong.
Right, right. So he's certainly capable of empathy. Yeah.
In the finale, he calls Pam his best friend.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know? Yeah, he comes in hot thinking that Pam has been attacked.
Right? And then PMSing pretty bad.
Yeah. there's a line in the viewing party episode in season 7 where Pam says, "Dwight, where Pam is trying to get Dwight to continue to take care of Cece."
Yeah, right, right.
And she says, "You and I have always had a great relationship. Remember your concussion?" And she says, "Yes. But you married my greatest enemy." Yeah. And Jim says, "I don't know. I think we have a charming back and forth."
That's such a nice moment.
Yeah.
Anything else to say about the most morally upright character on
my
The Office?
My third place.
Okay. Names.
This is a third, but it was Jim. I think Jim is the one who will, when circumstances arise, he is the one who steps up the most. In the injury, he is the one who says, "We need to take Dwight to the hospital," right?
Yeah.
In the fire, in stress relief, Jim is the one who says, "I'm not dying here," and he's going to try to break down the door with the copy machine, right? When Dwight is kind of crushed by his breakup with Angela in the money episode, Jim is the one who makes that appeal to Dwight.
The
stairwell scene. We've covered a few times on this show because it is so impactful, right?
It is.
In the context of their dynamic. I think
getting the money... The Michael Scott Paper Company arc at the end,
yes,
when he's helping
true.
Them out, mm-hmm. you know, he doesn't want to see, like, he doesn't want to see his, even Ryan, who he hates, doesn't want to see him, like, lose all this money and have nothing.
Right. When the situation dictates it, Jim will step up and do sort of things that I guess we would call morally right, or maybe
when
morally
he's in
virtuous.
The mood to step up.
that's for Ryan, yeah.
Lead me when I'm in the mood to
be led.
Obviously, Jim is kind of, you know, it's hard to say that Jim is very moral because of all the pranks on Dwight, mm-hmm. all of the sort of disregard and boredom he kind of has with his own job. But later in the show, he does care about the branch, right?
Yeah.
When he tries to become a manager, when he tries to kind of corral Michael a little bit, when he's the co-manager. But it's obviously pulled back in the other direction a little bit based on his treatment of Dwight. But he was the other character that I thought of who maybe could do his actions could fall into the category of moral or virtuous or good.
Yeah.
By the way, great Office trivia team name, In the Mood to be Led.
That is a good one. I like that. Next question was, what life lessons have you taken away from The Office?
Really quick, Angela and Ryan, least moral? Can we move on?
Yeah, do we have any other characters that we wanted
Robert
to talk
California
about?
Is very, Meredith.
Meredith just is fun.
Creed certainly.
Yeah, I think Creed, Ryan, and Angela. It's a race between
the first episode that I went to when trying to look into this topic was business ethics, and the takeaway was that none of them did anything to convince me that they.
I know.
Yeah, it's Meredith sleeping with suppliers. The Marinado sleeping with suppliers. Yeah. You guys know Bruce Myers.
Bruce.
Everyone's pretty apathetic, really, in the office.
Yes.
Like the whole cast is pretty apathetic
until the end when they're pro.
Right.
I don't care. Just keep the ribs coming. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, they all confessed to little morality issues or unethical issues. Right?
Yeah.
Oscar taking a long lunch or whatever.
Right.
It was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't really think of any other characters. But yeah, Robert California strikes me as immoral. Right.
Yes.
Andy coming out with the "Would you steal a loaf of bread to feed your family?"
Right. Yeah.
Boom. Mm-hmm. Ethics bomb.
I think it's Angela has none of the empathy and compassion Pam does, and all the conniving and backstabbing. She's awful.
She's definitely evil.
And Ryan, race with Ryan to the bottom, I think, for me, because Ryan just sucks.
Yeah.
Just sucks.
What's Dwight Jr.?
Ryan doesn't help. Ryan doesn't help
Clark.
Ryan doesn't help out anybody, like, the entire show.
Yeah.
Like,
no.
He just never helps anyone.
He does. He does tell Kelly not to Pam and Jim not to shake the baby.
That is true.
No, a lot of people get frustrated and they want to shake the baby.
As you mentioned those two characters, Ryan and Angela, and talk about how Angela maybe does so many, you know, immoral things or does not show herself to be a virtuous person based on her actions. I was thinking about how that makes her sort of character arc resolution that much more impactful. Mm. Is that she has to swallow her pride to tell Dwight that she loves him.
Yeah.
And I'm laughing because on the flip side there's Ryan, who has none of that growth.
Abandons a baby and rides away.
He runs away. Yeah.
Yes.
Literally runs away from all his responsibility with Kelly.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's the worst.
I think, and also, I mean, you know, we haven't mentioned Michael Scott. I think that I wouldn't say that he's the most morally upright character to begin with, but I think that his growth, his, like, you know, yeah, learning what right from wrong is, he's the most improved, let's say, by the end of it.
In kind of a hilarious way, Michael also does what he thinks is right to some extent.
Oh, big time.
Which I is think chaotic say, good really wrapped it up. Like, that's perfect.
He's trying to, he thinks the office should be a fun place. It's a family, right? So he's trying to create fun environments and entertaining meetings and make people laugh, right? He's trying to lighten the mood.
Yeah.
That's what he says to Jim in the Survivor Man episode when they're sitting on the couch. He says, sometimes I make jokes like that just to kind of lighten the mood, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny that Michael, it took so long for Michael to come up because he is such an example of what not to do in so many situations.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, maybe I'm kind of jumping in here, but, like, you know, we just watch Michael think through so many moral quandaries. Casual Friday, after the Michael Scott paper company is defunct.
Good catch.
thank you. It is hard.
We're still thriving.
Yeah. You know, his whole thing is about loyalty to his workers, right? No matter what. So when he then goes off and does the Michael Scott paper company and he's loyal to his workers and then they go back to Dunder Mifflin, he is being more loyal to those people who were with, like, who were with him all along. Now, you know, now it's this weird situation where he's back managing, you know, and so he literally has the quote that's like, no matter how I look at this, I am in the wrong. And I have looked at it at this thing like 100 different ways from my point of view, from their point of view, 98 others. And the bottom line, I am wrong. I'm the bad guy. So, I mean,
I love that quote.
It's so great because it's like, it is like he does have a rule that he's following that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Your workers are your family. You stick by them. Mm-hmm. But of course, this is a weird situation where he's now managing two different groups almost.
I was just learning to love.
There's a line from Phyllis where she says, Michael, you thought you were going after corporate, but we're the ones who got
Boom.
Hurt. You said we were a family, and then you went after
us. You see it on his face.
Yeah.
It's just like, it blows him away. Or, like, I mean, I don't know if he really learned his lesson this time, but when Kelly slaps him in the face
in Diversity Day,
you can he does have this moment where he's just like, you can see it on his face. He thought that was funny. He thought he was doing like something that was, I mean, you know, he's an idiot, but
she gets it.
She gets it. He starts to cry because he's like so in shock, I think.
The one scene for me, just to kind of wrap it up, but where we're seeing Michael's face deal with it in real time is after the whole Donna arc, and everyone has been, and there's the episode where everyone's basically telling him, like, you got to stop sleeping with Donna. You know shit. And he's like, I'm the bad boy. I don't care what people think of me. You'll learn, baby.
Ah, Phyllis.
And even Ryan's like, I don't know how you can't, you know, care about what people
that
think
guy
of you.
That doesn't give a F about nothing.
Yeah. And he's kind of spent the whole episode thumping his chest out and being like, I'm a new man. I don't care. I'm a bad boy.
Right,
and
right.
At the end, he's just driving to meet Donna. And
he kind of like rubs his eyebrows.
You just see his face. Like, he just is really thinking about it.
Yeah.
And his face slowly changes from horny guy going to a motel to like, I can't do this. And he turns around and he calls her and it's over. And like, that's it.
I swear there must be countless times where you watch, you get to watch him think it through. Mm-hmm. Like,
I had to choose between living with myself and being happy. I chose the former.
How do you tell somebody that you care about deeply, I told you so? Gently, with a rose, in a funny way, like it's a hilarious joke? Or do you just let it go? Because saying it would just make things worse. Probably the funny way. I mean, I love that quote, too, because even when Michael makes the wrong decision, it's part of the joke. We as the audience collectively get that, you know, he's chosen the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. I love that.
Should we move on?
Life lessons that away from the...
Ooh, big cough. We're going to life lessons.
Life lessons that you have taken away from The Office. Any?
I'm so sorry. With the cough, do you want us to take...
No, let's keep going. We're all leaving this in. It's wintertime, baby. People cough.
Winter time. We got the cough going around.
Oh, grow up. Sex contracts exist.
The question is posed to me, or do you want to ask it? Where are we at?
What life lessons have you taken away from The Office?
I made a list.
Yeah,
go ahead. I'll kick this off because I did make sort of a pros cons list of like what are the good things The Office could teach you? What are the bad things?
Yeah.
I just want to point out now, and you know, this is just three guys. We're roughly the same age. Like we ideally for this episode.
He says that because he's the oldest.
Yeah. we're all in our 20s here, guys. Ideally, you know, for this, you'd want older people, younger people, men, women. You'd want all different types of people. So we're sorry it's just us, but hopefully you're still listening to the show. But I think, like, the sort of pros of this for me were that good things can happen if you're just patient. Like, things just take time. Things take a long time. And that's why this show has 9 seasons of, like, Jim finally, you know, getting the courage to start this business idea he had. Or Angela and Dwight finally getting together. Or just Jim and whole Pam's relationship is just basically a lesson in, like, good things will come to those who wait.
Yeah.
If you're patient.
Yeah.
And that it's, like, it's okay to be comfortable in your own skin. Mm-hmm. And that communication is always healthy and can almost always negate or solve conflict when you just communicate. Because The Office is just a playground of people miscommunicating or not saying something and then bad things happening and having to figure it out later.
Yeah.
And then to me, the most important takeaway of The Office is that, like, the people you love are the most important thing in your life. And they will be there for you when you need them, even if you don't think they will be. And this happens time and again. This whole thing about the whole conversation about Dwight and Pam is, it happens time and again in the show.
Yeah.
Where people there to pick each other up. And this happens in sitcoms. Like, when you have to wrap up every episode, usually near the end of an episode, there's a scene where the character learns X, you know? And it happens all the time. But that, to me, that's like, The Office is, it's an ensemble show, and that's what it teaches you, is that the ensemble of whoever is in your life is going to be there for you, and that people love you and that you love people. And that's the most important thing.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
That's really
family.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Family. And I also wrote that what's great is, like, the sort of desires of all the characters are pretty limited, and it helps it sort of kind of keep it simple. Like, most people aren't chasing money except Ryan. Most people aren't. No one's chasing power except Dwight, and no one's chasing sex except Michael.
No one's chasing fame except Andy, maybe
and no
Michael.
Chasing
yeah,
fame except
fame,
Andy
yeah,
and Michael.
There you go.
But for the most part, everyone's fairly relatable, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote down that, like, more often than not, it does seem like there's usually negative consequences for immoral behavior on the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe one exception is Prince Family Paper. but Michael does feel very guilty about
that. But Dwight would argue that is moral.
Yeah. See,
he uses the Lord of the Rings analogy.
Yeah.
And if Frodo had not destroyed the ring, then goodness itself would have died. If Michael had not taken out Prince Family Paper, maybe Dunder Mifflin.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but in my career, I have been asked to do things that aren't exactly ethical. Like, I mean, you know, it's,
Sean's a hitman.
Are you a cocktail waitress?
It's the film business. It moves fast. We are in, like, you know, real locations and stuff like that.
You work on Cops, right?
I mean, it's just one of these things where, like, it's a really high stakes, like, deadlines and big egos and all this stuff, and, like, you do have to stop yourself sometimes and be like, I'm actually not cool with that. Like, I'm actually not cool with asking them to do that for no money or blah blah blah, you know, having an intern do something
like, right,
or whatever. So you know, I love that episode, Prince Family Paper, where they really, like, you know, what if, like, you just wanted to impress your boss, and they had you do this terrible thing, destroy this small family business. So I love moments like that where, you know, it kind of shows you, like, yeah, it's as Americans, we feel that, you know, you need to just do your job. But that's a perfect example of when it wasn't the right thing to do, probably.
Right. Yeah. I think for me, the biggest one, and this is something that I've really taken into my personal life, which is to think more deeply and observe more closely, like, the world around you.
Mm-hmm.
I think the big lesson that I got from The Office was that if you pay attention, there's so many little funny things that go on in the world around you. So just paying attention to the reactions of people in your day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. I started watching The Office when I was in high school when it was on TV, and it just got me to pay more attention to things like that. And you find funny stories and funny moments and things to laugh about. The world is such a funny place if you just think about, if you look at it through that lens. You can find ways to, you know, like in ways that will surprise you and that are very unexpected. You know, as the show itself, says, there's a lot of beauty in ordinary things. So it's just to be able to appreciate the situation that you're in, even though it may not seem like where you want to be at that time, right? I wish there was a way to know you were in the good old days when you were in them, as Andy Bernard says. So just in general, to carry that along with you in life, that you can appreciate whatever situation you're in, even if it feels like a stepping stone to the next place. And that if you pay attention to the world around you, you'll probably find things to make you laugh and people that are that maybe have more to offer than they seem. I think that's we start with The Office in the kind of the doldrums, the mundane state of life and the state of ennui. And the show itself brightens up in terms of its color, the cinematography, the way that the characters interact. It becomes such a louder show at the end. And it's because it tracks with the development of all the characters and what we know about them. By the end, we know so much stuff about Stanley and Phyllis, right? Where in the beginning, we know almost nothing about them, you know?
Stanley's not very moral, by the way.
In the Christmas episode in season two, Oscar is getting a Secret Santa gift for Creed. And he says, I don't know much about Creed. I think he's Irish, so I got him this Shamrock keychain.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing that we know about the characters. So just as that evolves over the course of the show, we become so much more invested. And to circle back to it, the life lesson is that everyone has their own story to tell. You know, that there's something to appreciate about everyone around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
From ennui to ennui.
And I mean, we watch Michael wrongfully judge people so often. I mean, right from the start of the show, you are a gentleman and a scholar.
Yeah.
Oh, I am sorry.
Like that's
did not know that.
The whole show's just like is just everyone's trying to find a connection to someone else. Like the whole show, every plot line, all the big story arcs, even all the small ones are just people just trying to have a connection with someone else. And then it happening, you know?
Right.
Paper in a paperless world.
Yeah.
Any other life lessons? We'll move on to the last part of Pat's question.
If you wear a sumo suit, you should always wear the safety mittens. Yeah. If you rent a car and drive it into the lake, you should get the insurance beforehand.
Don't do a 30-year fixed mortgage.
Yeah. If you're going to have a viewing party at your house and you're going to watch Glee, you got to record it in case Jim wants to check the scores of the game.
And put a padlock on the
on the cable box.
On the breaker box.
Please. Yeah. Please. I had a couple bad ones. Here's some bad life lessons.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That recklessness is not destructive. It's just funny. abusing your power usually works. You probably won't get fired for doing X, Y, or Z.
Yep.
Teasing is usually deserved. just keep harassing until you get what you want. Michael and Donna. Even Jim and Pam to an extent.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then people just, the idea of just don't say anything, just deal with it and get through it. Like the harassment that Oscar takes over the first few seasons is just criminal.
Even at the end.
And it's like, that's not a good. But it's like, well, the show is just like, just get through it.
Yeah.
Think about when he's giving that video into his computer and Robert California takes over.
Oh, I know. God. Ugh. Ugh. And my last one, which goes in both a pro and a con, which is shoot your shot.
Hey, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott, Alex Ward.
Exactly. Exactly.
Do you think watching The Office has made you a better person?
Yes, but only slightly. Yes, but only slightly.
Yeah, I think because it's created more community in my life.
Yeah, I think in thinking back to our civilization, we have these texts, right, or pieces of art that kind of reflect cultural values, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And in the talk, Mike Schur talks about how television is the quintessential American art form, at least of the 20th century, right? You think about an art form that we engage with 6 to 8 hours a day, right? The content is reflecting our cultural values back at us a lot of the time. And I think we see a lot of that in The Office. We see that play out. We see things like characters being good or bad to each other, and we take lessons from that. You know, so that's how we kind of can distill those kinds of lessons from that. And it's less explicit than in the show like The Good Place, which is telling you about that, right?
Right.
And again, to go back to the talk, Mike Schur talks about how there's a very like a limited amount of what's actually good out there, and maybe there's mediocrity, like a lot of mediocre stuff. But you got to find what's good out there. And I think in terms of did it make, has it made me a better person? Just a little bit, based on the little things that you take away from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't attribute it all of my personality to watching The Office.
No.
But yeah.
I don't really even think it's The Office. It's watching The Office has made me a better person. And what I mean by that is like the community that even just with you guys doing the show has created,
that,
or that people listening to the show have felt, and like hearing back from people that they like the show. Like, and watching it with my friends in college every week, that was a huge thing for me. Like having a friend group I could count on. And even since then, like just like the other night, you know, my brother and I both feeling kind of sick and just watching The Office for 4 hours together. Mm-hmm. Like that to me is The Office has taught me to really value those people and those kind of groups in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that what I wrote was, I think a person can learn right from wrong by watching Michael Scott, even when he does the wrong thing.
You need someone to just chaotically do wrong things.
Right.
This is how you don't do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anytime he does the wrong thing, like even if you really didn't if you lacked empathy and didn't understand that he was doing the wrong thing, you would understand the way that the jokes are constructed, and you would know that that there's a joke there.
Yeah,
he must not be doing the right thing.
Yeah.
One note that I had about Pam that I forgot to mention. I'm so glad you brought this back.
Yeah.
Was there are a number of times in the show where Pam says, "Oh, Michael," right? And it's a way that the show calls out Michael being immoral, right? And in the Lecture Circuit episode, there are two that I wrote down. Number one, where Michael comes into the diner and he says, "Do you want some pie?" I took a letter from Holly's computer. He's like, "I cut the sleeve off her jacket."
I cut the sleeve off.
And Pam goes, "Oh, Michael." And then at the end, when Michael's feeling really good, he's like, "Who else should we apologize to? We should go find Roy."
Yeah.
And he says, "I should find that fat guy from Stanford."
Yeah.
And then he does his, and she says, "Tony." And he says, "Yeah." And he goes through his whole memory trick to
pepperoni
remember his name.
Tony.
Right. Fat guy's like, "Pizza, pepperoni, Tony." And she says, "Oh, Michael." Same thing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's the show calling itself out.
Right. So I think watching Michael Scott learn, or watching him do the wrong thing and everybody chastising him for it. I think those little parables have stuck their way. Got stuck in my brain. After Michael Scott leaves season 8 and 9, those make you a worse person watching those. That's my hot take.
Well, that's a lot.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
we did
really
pretty good.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you, Pat. That was a great question. We've been sitting on that one for a while. I'm sure we'll come back to it often.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get a lot of messages from people.
Yeah, that's
you guys always fill in the gaps.
That's the other thing. Please, this is a great one for people to weigh in on. We'd love to revisit it. So give us your takes. Who's your most morally upright character on The Office, or the least?
It's a good journal.
What are the life lessons that you've learned? Yeah.
it's a great just like writing exercise for Office fans. Just answer the question. Does The Office make you a better person?
It's
an
interesting
come up with
way to think about the
and
show.
Also, it's okay if it's no, because it is a TV show. Like, it's fine. Yeah. Fine if you don't have... It's fine. Anyway. More questions?
Please leave a message for Andy Bernard.
Okay, well, we have a few questions from our listeners. You guys have been sending us in so many questions, so thank you so much. We are going to do more mailbag segments or mailbag episodes. So if you sent us something, we're collecting them all, and we want to get to everything. So thank you very much.
I think going forward, I mean, we're going to have to do, I think we'll be having just a mailbag in every show going forward because we have so many questions.
Great.
So again, if you're out there and you keep sending stuff, like we're cataloging it, we'll get to it. We just need to mix and match for the shows we're doing. But anyway, let's kick it off here.
First up, voicemail from Robert in Oklahoma.
The first would you rather is, would you rather know what's in the teapot letter, or would you rather know what is the voicemail that Robert California left Nelly that Pam deleted?
That's a great one.
There's
Thank you, Robert.
Good, the teapot letter is always a good, like, would you rather read that or something else?
I would rather the teapot letter in most situations.
Yeah. But in this situation, I would much rather hear Robert California.
Really? I would rather not hear that voicemail under most circumstances.
I'd like to hear the voicemail. I'd like to know.
I'd like to know.
I want to meet the Lizard King.
I'm not that curious about, I've mentioned this before, I'm not as curious about the teapot letter. I feel like
I get it.
I don't know if there's any surprises in there, but I'm sure there's some shocking things
yeah.
in the Robert California voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
Something the man talks of nothing but sex. Not yeah. true. Sometimes he also talks about flesh.
Next up. This is from Dan 2.0 on Twitter. Shout out to Dan. Hitting us with all sorts of stuff on Twitter. He actually asked us, we might want to do a whole episode on this point, but okay. he challenged us to come up with a whole Office episode plot, like right
our oh, own. Okay. Oh, wow.
Like, what? Like he said, if we were in charge of episode, what would we do?
So, Thanksgiving.
Let's think about that for later.
man.
I know.
Whoa.
I know. But not to take you down the wrong path. But anyway, he says he just listened to the Jim and Dwight podcast and how their friendship blossomed. Got me thinking, how long was the team all there and what were they like before the documentary ever started? Was Jim a newbie?
Oh,
was
yeah,
Creed
right.
the man? Which I think is funny because, yeah, mid early 90s Creed.
Yeah.
Would have been the coolest.
The coolest, yeah.
My only thing about it was
like Ed Truck's drug dealer or something, and that's the only way yeah. he got the job. I mean,
he
I
was high as a kite when yeah. he was flying down the highway, so
that's right.
It's probably Creed's drugs.
Quality assurance. Some Creed Bratton.
Yeah. Supplying.
I think the show alludes to the fact that Jim has been in the job for 2 or 3 years, like very
yeah,
early
I
on.
Three.
I think in like the pilot episode.
Yeah.
Then Michael also says Pam's been with us forever or something like mm-hmm. that, or at least a couple years or something like that. You should have seen her a couple years ago.
Right.
So, yeah. like, Jesus Christ. I would imagine it's been, for a while, it's for the last couple of years at least, it's been very similar to how we see it
yeah.
in season one. Everyone's very quiet,
mm-hmm.
Michael's very loud.
I would like to see the version of The Office. There's that picture of Ed Druck shaking Michael's hand.
Yeah.
Oh,
where Michael
the
has
hair.
The long
oh
hair.
My God.
And
I
love that. It's become a meme.
It's such a great meme. Yeah.
Great it's picture.
Like, I can't even think of one off the top of my head, but like there's so many great ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I like to think that when Jim first showed up, like how grotesquely Meredith was hitting on Jim. Probably.
Oh,
and I like to think that when the time the show starts, it's kind of subsided. She just sort of has given up and stopped
yeah.
doing it.
Yeah.
Because she still does every now and then in the show. But imagine, like, when he first came, I bet she was just a monster.
It is interesting to think that we know all these characters for the same amount of time in that season 1 to season 9, right? So we see similar amounts of development from most of them, right?
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
characters like Andy and Aaron come in later. But the truth is that some of these characters have been working together for longer than that, like Stanley
right.
and
yeah.
Phyllis. Or
so
Dwight
where did they used to be?
Yeah,
there
exactly.
was probably development before we even mm-hmm. met them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine what that version of The Office was like. We also have to remember that Todd Packer was in The Office for a long time.
Yes,
and we wrote his
right.
name under the desk. And
yeah.
Todd Packer and Michael, just like their adventures.
Now there's not a reboot, but a prequel show where you cast mm-hmm. everyone as much younger versions of themselves.
Oh, my gosh.
Get that. Anyway, thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, let's go to voicemail from Brittany here in Portland.
Hey, guys. My name is Brittany, and I am calling from next door to you. I don't know where you live. That was creepy. From Portland. And I just got done listening to the episode on the Dundies and Michael's Last Dundies. And you may touch on this. I was a little surprised that you guys didn't bring up the tidbit that the song from Rent that the author sings to Michael at the end of Michael's Last Dundies, that was actually a surprise to Steve Carell from the cast. He didn't know that they were going to be singing that song, and so his reaction in that scene is a genuine Steve Carell reaction, which I remember when I heard that, like watching it every time since then, it just like gives you chills and just makes it that much cooler. So anyways, I just wanted to share the little tidbit if you guys didn't know that. Thanks for the show, and yeah, have a good one.
Thanks, Brittany.
I didn't know that.
I knew that. I had
oh,
heard
you knew that.
Before.
Yeah, I heard
have
that,
you?
But only recently.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh,
it was. I feel like I must have seen it in some buzz, like
yeah.
you know, 12 things you didn't know.
I didn't
yeah,
know that.
But yeah, yeah. When he's like, he says something like
something's
happening. Yeah, that's a genuine
Steve Carell
reaction. Yeah.
Which is interesting because Steve Carell is we see him a little bit. He's not the most. His off-camera persona is not very dominating. His persona,
yeah,
you know what
right.
I mean. So, and but when you listen to Office Ladies or other people, they talk about how great Steve is. You know,
yeah, yeah.
And so, like that, his actual reaction aligns with what Michael Scott's reaction
yeah.
could be.
Yeah.
Is a pretty great coincidence, and it works really well within the context of the show.
That's right.
Yeah,
yeah. No, that's such a great little factoid.
I put that in there to see if it would soften your heart about that moment.
It does. I mean, I like that. It's very sweet. Even I like that moment. And even all that's corniness.
Even I.
Also,
even I. Yeah, and then she sent us a story.
Also, shout out to Brittany's child named, let's see, daughter named Cordelia. So it says they were looking at toys one day in the store. Daughter was looking at toys. Brittany was looking at house stuff. Daughter comes up to Brittany and says, come here, I want to show you something I want. She says, no, I'm all the way over here. I don't want to walk to the toy. She says, okay. A couple minutes later, hey, let me show you something that says Dunder Mifflin on it. I finish what I'm doing and say, okay, and I follow her back to the merchandise, which was just the toys with no office. So her daughter figured
out
what was important to Brittany.
That's so funny.
Which is Dunder Mifflin.
She didn't even think twice about it. Like, oh, yeah, let's show it to me.
Just incredible stuff. Incredible. I love it. I love it.
That's awesome.
All right.
One more from, how about a...
Another Would You Rather?
Yeah, Would You Rather from Vaughn from Michigan.
Hi, this is Vaughn from East Lansing. Would you rather be roommates with pre-anger management Andy or Michael Klump?
Why, hello, everybody.
Oh, God. I guess he'd always come home like that.
Beautiful.
Michael Klump, I think, would be...
He'd be knocking everything over.
He'd be constantly talking like that, but I think... Andy, a pre-anger management Andy, that's a little scary.
He would be a lot to handle. As a roommate, he would be following you like he followed Michael. All right, roommate, what are we doing this weekend?
Yeah, oh my God. Sorry I annoyed you with my friendship.
Cornell.
Hey, yo.
Cornell, Hofstra, Slaughter. Yeah.
Slaughter.
Yeah. Get my beer on, get my lost on.
Yeah, even without him having a tantrum, he'd be intolerable. So, mm-hmm. No. It's going to be a Michael Klump for me.
I would go with Michael Klump as well. All we know about Michael Klump is he promotes positive body imagery. he seems okay.
He's got a great
bang boom.
He's got a great goatee.
Bang boom. Yeah, that's like he punctuates his sentences with that. Bang boom. Yes. Yeah.
Tailored suits.
Yeah. Do we ever wonder? No one ever asked Michael where he got that suit to fit over the suit.
I know. That's
we
one
bring
of
that
the
up every time
yeah. That's one of the things about the show is like he got a tailored
suit. Yeah. to fit a slightly deflated sumo suit.
Yeah. Which it
more expensive. Got to be more expensive
than the women's suits he pulls out of the bins.
It's mysterious, and it is mysterious because the buttons are on the wrong side.
Look, it has no pockets.
It's Italian, it's
European cut.
Yeah.
Well, we're short on time here. We have more, but we'll put them into a later mailbag.
Yes.
So again, if you're sending in questions we haven't answered, don't worry.
Thank you again for sending stuff in. It's so great to get
I'll just say right now too. I mean, we're gonna do a Christmas episode, holiday episodes, and stuff like that. So you can start sending us questions specifically about that too. We'll most likely discuss it that way.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. You want to do some trivia?
Let's do some trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
Okay, for this trivia, this is a general trivia where I'm, I keep a notebook by the TV, and I just, as I watch The Office, jot down notes. So we're all over the seasons, all over the episodes.
Love it.
Just some custom. Well, you get a week off. Sure. You got to bring something to the table here.
Yeah, baby.
So, Sean, you already took one of my answers, which was you are at your job title. You've already identified
that's amazing.
The playhouse in which Andy's play is the Loose Screw Playhouse.
Yes.
Wow. What is the director's name?
Oh, Shelby Thomas Weems.
Yes.
Damn it.
That was a quick
draw.
I was just obvious.
I mean, I was just watching that one right before coming here. So I was like, I caught that. They show the front of the playhouse really quick. And it's the Loose Screw Playhouse, but Shelby Thomas Weems.
I love that name.
What
a
great name.
Funny. Like, I've caught it before.
That's almost a Parks and Rec level name.
Yeah.
Parks and Rec, very good with the
name.
No
hyphens in there. I was looking for it. It's just
Shelby
Thomas
Weems.
He's
going to find a role for Michael Scott.
So nice to Michael. Yeah. If you come back with the same passion.
Yeah.
He's like, this guy. Okay. This is a two-parter. We all know that Broccoli Rob sings the State Milk Lobby's song. What is the name of that song he does with Trey Anastasio?
I don't know.
Calcium.
Calcium. And what is Broccoli Rob's last name?
Oh, jeez. Shout out, Broccoli. I don't know.
It is Broccoli Rob Blatt, which Andy
in the article
out of Cornell Magazine. Yeah. Okay, when Jim and Dwight call Michael to help pull in the sale when they see Danny Cordray, where are they? What is the company where Jim and Dwight call Michael to come close the deal?
Aren't they at, they're at Osprey.
No, that's where Danny works.
No.
Dang it.
Yeah.
They're the Penis Museum.
they're at Frame Select.
Where tickets cost $1,000.
Frame Select. In that same episode, Dwight sets up a fake company. Of course, we get Meredith Van Helsing. What is the name of the fake company that Dwight turns his office into?
Oh, Pennsylvania Solar Tech.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I could see in your eyes you knew that before I asked it. Okay. Jeez. Marie the Concierge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A geisha of Canada, if you will.
Yeah.
Gives them... Well, she recommends three places.
Okay, the laundry, the dry cleaners.
Astro cleaners
on
4th.
St. James Place.
Oh, St. James.
And then recommends two places.
Ooh,
at the top.
Matsuki, that's good.
Yes, Matsuki, the sushi place with a view. And then where they end up meeting her later in the financial district is called?
I don't know.
The Huntsman.
The Huntsman. Oh, that should have got that.
Huntsman?
I was going to say like the something lodge.
She says it the way she says
it.
Oh,
the Huntsman. That's good.
The Huntsman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember watching that. Last time I watched it, I was like, that would be a good trivia question.
A concierge is trained in the art of fanciness and pleasure.
How you say
ravishing.
I do love that shot of their conversation when he's like, all right, Christmas Eve, you need to get something dry clean. And amazing. Amazing.
Love
it. He's so impressed. So impressed. What does Jim make his last name in Second Life?
Sam Tanko.
Yes, Jim what? Sam Tanko.
Yeah.
What?
Philly Jim. Writer. Got the guitar on his back.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How much time did you spend on this? Nah, I'm going to show me how this works.
No, I want to learn more about Philly Jim.
Michael initially thinks Tallahassee is in what state?
He thinks Texas?
Yes, that is correct. Nice. In Texas. When they first start their band, Andy, Daryl, and Kevin sing a song about the love life of what animal?
Frog.
That's correct. Yeah. A bullfrog.
Croak, croak, croak. Bullfroggy in love.
My friend, you're absolutely riveting. Yes. Where did Pam go to high school?
Not Bishop O'Hara.
This is a trivia question before. Mm-hmm. Oh, shoot. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's something very simple.
Not Pig Slop, who cares?
I don't know it. What is it?
It's Valley View High
Valley
School.
Valley View.
That's where the job fair is held. Yep. That's right. I just wrote this down. Because the same scene as that question. Just shout out to the Frank Regan funeral home when it pans over to that guy.
That guy is perfect casting.
And Michael goes, too much formaldehyde. That guy is the most casting job The Office ever
it's
did.
Perfect.
Frank Regan
That's
funeral
That's the joke,
home.
Just looking at
he's
him.
So, he's so crypt-like.
Too much formaldehyde.
Too much. Frank Regan funeral home, too much formaldehyde.
The Air Force, and they start rushing the stage.
Air Force is cool.
Air Force is cool.
All right. We all know the famous scene where Michael says, if I had a gun with two bullets and I was in a room with Hitler, Bin Laden, and Toby, I'd shoot Toby twice.
Yeah.
Once he's called out for that being too inappropriate, well, how does he adjust it? What does he actually say he'll do?
Curve the bullet. Like my favorite James McAvoy movie,
That's Creed's advice.
I know.
Dwight says, shoot him all through the throat. But Michael's when they're like, you went too far. And he's like, okay.
Dang, I don't know.
I don't know. What is it?
He says he'll kill Bin Laden and then Toby.
Oh. Oh,
so he leaves Hitler alive.
Gosh.
Okay, during the Donna breakup, or when the office expects that Michael's going to be coming back dejected after breaking up with Donna, Pam has two movies scheduled to cheer him up. What are those two movies? One in the conference room and one in the office. And folks, we need bodies in there.
Weekend at Bernie's?
No.
Ah, dang.
Shoot, I don't know.
Animal House?
It's
Comedy
Shack.
Like that. Yeah, it's Airplane. I don't know.
Mr. Bean in the conference room.
Oh,
and Pink Panther in his office.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Scheduled with half-hour watching shifts.
Oh, God. The only person in the conference room is Kevin.
Kevin, yes.
He's enjoying himself.
Yeah. I love that scene because the whole office is just clicking.
Oh,
everyone's
yeah.
on the same page. Like,
it's
let's
so
all
good.
Avoid this.
And then he doesn't need
the
it at
when
all.
The scene when Toby goes, hey, everyone, and Pam just goes, get out, go,
get out, go,
go,
go, Toby.
It's so funny. immediately shoot away. All right, Jim, Andy, and Kevin go golfing with a potential client. What is that client's name?
No clue.
He's a Dartmouth boy.
I know.
My grandpa would be spinning in his urn.
If he knew I was a guy with a Dartmouth man. Andy Bernard, Cornell, 96.
Cornell, 95.
95? I guess. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. What, I don't know. What is it?
Phil McGuire. Mr. McGuire.
Mm-hmm. I told Phil. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
All right, last question from that same scene.
Okay.
This is the hard one. This is the, you know, you get the sheet at your nightly trivia, and you got to answer the questions over the course of the night. Kevin asks what kind of golf betting games they're playing. He gives
seven
possible variations. Can you name four?
One is Wolf,
yes.
Lucy Goosey?
No.
Lucy Deucey. Something like that?
AC Deucey.
AC Deucey.
We'll give you that
Deucey.
One.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know. Those are the two that I have.
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. It's Skins, AC Deucey, Bingo Bango Bongo, Sandy's, Barkies, Arnie's, Wolf. Anyway, those are the seven.
I knew Wolf. That was the one that I knew. Wolf.
Yeah, Skins, AC Deucey. I know Skins was one.
It's
I've
like the
never
time that
others.
Creed is like pestering Meredith about what kind of medication she's on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway. Or like when Kelly is questioning Donna about where she got her earrings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah totally.
Steve. Where? Claire's? earrings? Yeah.
That's it.
Thank you. That was a great trivia.
That was a good one. I like how random that was.
Yeah. I'm going to try and do more of that.
It sounds like you and I are kind of in the same spot right now of rewatching. This is like...
I just did the back half of season 6.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah totally. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. Please call in if you have any questions for us. That number's 503-694-9314. We love to play them on the show. Or you can email us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. And we're on Facebook and Instagram, Michael Scott Podcast Company. We're on Twitter at Michael Scott Pod.
Mm-hmm. Send us questions through there if you want to.
Yeah, anywhere. There's a website where you can find all those ways of getting a hold of us, Michael Scott Pod. .com.
Snail mail, just general delivery to Portland, Oregon. Just it'll get to us.
To the Michael Scott Podcast Company, Portland, Oregon.
Care of Open Signal, baby.
Speaking of.
Special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who runs our social media and designs all our artwork, and Open Signal, a community center, media center in Portland where we record our show in
the cold Airstream trailer.
We got a little space heater over here. It's working. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys so much for listening. Join us next week.
Pippity poppy, give me the salad.
Yes, sir.
Let's get ethical. I want to get ethical. Let's get into ethics, yeah. Let me hear your Dunder Mifflin talk. Your body talk. Let me hear your body talk.
Woo! All right.
Why are you helping her? You're not even dating. She's my friend, and ultimately my strategy is to sort of merge this into a relationship without her even knowing.
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.